It's time for Overtime.
And I know just the guy to talk to.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Tell me more, tell me more.
Hear from coaches, the players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to the Monday, May 11th edition of Overtime. Happy belated Mother's Day to all the wonderful mothers out there. Hope you were showered with love, praise, and adoration over the weekend, as you should be. It was a fun, sunshiny weekend here in the 605. We're ready to rumble into the work week on this Monday, May 11th edition of the show. NBA Draft Lottery is behind us. NFL schedule release is right in front of us, and we got a lot to break down, including massive weekends in the baseball and softball world locally. Congratulations to the USD Coyote softball team as they find their way to win their first ever Summit League title. We'll highlight that team. Very memorable weekend in Minneapolis. Also, Augustana baseball, softball. Congratulations in order there, as both programs punch their tickets to the NCAA tournaments and the regional rounds. On today's program, on this day in sports history, Wolves win game four. Victor Wembanyama, human after all, an ugly stain of a moment on his young career, an elbow to the jugular of Naz Reid, and why the San Antonio Spurs need an enforcer, according to Chris Canty, coming up later on in the show. Latest from the NBA, reset of the odds after that particular series, now tied two games apiece. Latest from the NFL, whip around coverage of the sports world at the end of hour one. And then it sets up a jam-packed hour number two. Headlines and highlights on the way. We're talking Sioux Falls Stampede, who continue to find their way back into these contests, overtime games, back and forth the series goes, as fate would have it, against our hated, vaunted rivals to the north. The Fargo Four Sioux Falls Stampede are going to play a winner-take-all game five in the Western Conference Finals in Sioux Falls. Premier Center tomorrow night, 7:05. You can find everything you need to know. Full recap of the overtime winner for Sioux Falls Stampede hockey over the weekend. Ticketing information, ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Head coach Ryan Crothers joins us at 12:20 in hour number two. And then we wrap up the show today talking about a program that fell a little short at the NSIC baseball tournament, USF Cougar baseball, another nice year. And we recap the season with head coach Grant Heap coming up about 12:40, following that up with, of course, the good, the bad, and the ugly, including interesting competition for the young career accolades of Tiger Woods from South Africa. We'll dive into that news and so much more in the good, the bad, and the ugly coming up later on today around 12:50. Now let's dive into the scorecard, where Carl Anthony Towns, pretty darn good for the New York Knicks, who are absolutely insanely hot right now. They sweep the Sixers out of the postseason, 144-114, the triumph in game four. 4-0 victory there. Carl Anthony Towns, 17 points, 10 rebounds. Pretty darn good, according to Jay Williams.
You have to give Carl Anthony Towns a round of applause. I mean, regardless of however Joel Embiid looked, like, he attacked. He was relentless. Last night, 17 points, 10 assists. And by the way, him being unlocked by Mike Brown has opened up this system in order for them to be the best version of themselves.
And you got to feel right now, with how high and low we were in the first round series for the New York Knicks, this past four, five, six, seven games, they've been the best team, second best team in the entire postseason. Very impressive, and maybe they'll stay hot enough to win the East, make their way to the NBA Finals, and make it pretty darn interesting against the Thunder or whoever comes out of the West. But the New York Knicks, a 144-114 winner. What stood out? Here's Evan Cohen.
There are three bodies of work that, based on this series, I think speak for themselves. Three bodies of work. Okay, let me be very clear on this. If Daryl Morey is your team president, you will not get to the finals. He's not good at the winning thing, despite what he claims.
I'm pretty good at the winning thing.
No, you're not. You will not get to the NBA finals. if Joel Embiid is the best player or the face of your franchise in Philadelphia, you will not get to the conference finals. There is one MVP in league history who has never played in the conference finals.
Embiid.
Yeah. And if Tom Thibodeau is your coach, you're going to get from bad to good to maybe very good. You're not going to get to great. Mike Brown can get you to great. I believe in Mike Brown more than I believe in Tom Thibodeau. If you're a bad team, hire Tibbs tomorrow. This is not to say he can't be in the NBA as a head coach.
There you go. Three takeaways from Evan Cohen, NBA postseason. And, of course, last night, Minnesota found a way. It was not pretty. Victor Wembanyama swinging an elbow, pretty darn intentional, asking his teammate Harrison Barnes, hey, what does that mean for me? Am I allowed to keep playing? Do I have to sit out a few minutes? Oh, I'm ejected. Okay, I'll storm off to the locker room then. Credit to the Spurs. They played really hard with the absence of their spectacular seven-footer and almost got the deal done for a 3-1 lead. But Minnesota, the more resilient team down the stretch in the fourth quarter, 114-109. The final score, Anthony Edwards, 36 points, 6 assists. Naz Reid, 15-9-4. Here's Brian Windhorst saying the quiet part out loud. This ejection for Victor Wembanyama, inexcusable and could prove pretty darn costly for his team.
You absolutely do not take yourself out of a game like this. I think Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs have shown incredible maturity. They have been praised up and down for it the entire season and this postseason. This was a very immature act by a player who took himself out of a game, opened the door for his team now to lose leverage in the series. And while I understand you're going to defend your superstar, absolutely no way can Mitch Johnson say that. If you want to have somebody protect Victor Wembanyama, you bring in somebody else off the bench and have him protect him. You do not have your star player throwing elbows like that. And he will avoid a suspension now. He better not do this again because he would get suspended for this kind of hit. It is now 2-2 and he's going to have, I have no doubt, he'll play in a way that will make us forget that. Absolutely unacceptable to do this in a playoff game.
And that's Brian Windhorst. Now the head coach Mitch Johnson saying, please don't serve any more punishment to Wemby.
No. Again, I don't even know the layout or the rules, but there was zero intent. They did what they did because of the outcome of the play. So be it. But to have anything on top of that, I think would be ridiculous.
I think it's ridiculous to say there was zero intent there. You can watch the video full speed, half speed, slow-mo. You can see the intent is there. I'm not going to call Victor Wembanyama a dirty player, but that was absolutely a dirty play, which is so darn surprising about it because the reputation so far of Wemby has been exceptionally good, exceptionally quiet, not a loudmouth, not a bad teammate, not a dirty guy. I don't think he deserves that label, but that play absolutely is a dirty play. No doubt about it. We'll wait and see about any possible suspension fine moving forward in the hours ahead here on a Monday. Chris Canty echoing the sentiments of Wendy on Wemby a second ago, saying that the Spurs have failed Wembanyama because they don't have an enforcer on their roster.
I do think there was a concerted effort by the Minnesota Timberwolves to frustrate Wemby, and good on Terrence Shannon Jr. and the rest of the Wolves for recognizing when Wemby got two fouls to get even more physical in terms of taking the basketball right at him on the defensive end, roughing him up, putting bodies on him. They frustrated him. They flustered him. So Mitch Johnson is right in his assessment of what's happening to Victor Wembanyama. My only issue with him is that you knew this in terms of what team's approach would be to negate Wemby's strengths coming into the season. You knew what this would be. And to not be better prepared as a team to be able to offset that in these moments, that's on you. That's not on anybody else. Like, Chris Finch is telling his guys to do exactly what they should do. If you're Brian Wright, GM for San Antonio, or if you're Mitch Johnson, the head coach for San Antonio, why the hell don't you have somebody out there that's an enforcer to try to protect Victor Wembanyama?
Yeah, pretty good point. We'll see. Again, the Spurs are still a pretty darn young, exciting team. They've rounded out pieces of the roster. They're really darn good. They could win it all this year. But that's right. There is an assertion to be made that they do not have an enforcer on the roster. They don't have people that are on the floor, get some tough minutes, and certainly mix it up a bit, rile up additional players on the other side. San Antonio appearing not to have that. We'll see how they respond coming up in game number 5. Tonight in the NBA, Pistons at Cavs game 4. Detroit leads 2-1. 7 o'clock on NBC. Cleveland favored at home by 3.5. And then closing time, perhaps, for the Los Angeles Lakers. They're home to OKC. Game number 4. Thunder lead 3-0. 9:30 on Prime Video. Could be the final game of the career of LeBron James tonight. OKC favored by 10.5. Lastly, over the weekend, the NBA draft lottery took place. Washington will be picking first, followed by Utah, Memphis, and Chicago in the top four. One of the top prospects is Kansas, Darren Peterson. How many concerns are out there about him and his draft status? Here's ESPN NBA draft analyst Jeremy Wu.
I think the talent really speaks. I think this is something that teams have done their homework on from talking to people around the NBA. The intel on Peterson, he's a hard worker. He's serious. He cares. Like, I don't think that's in question. I we'll have answers this week as he does his medicals, as he goes through this process, as teams sit down with him in interviews. I think that'll help clarify some of these lingering things. But for me personally, I think he's very much in the mix for number one. I would consider him there. I would be very happy taking him number two. There's nothing to me, to my knowledge at this time, that would make me, worry beyond that.
And that's Jeremy Wu. Again, the top spot in the NBA draft this upcoming year will be Washington, followed by Utah, Memphis, and the Chicago Bulls at number four. In the NHL, Stanley Cup playoffs on Saturday, Minnesota defended home ice 5-1, the victory over Colorado. Colorado still maintains a 2-1 lead in the series. Last night, Montreal over Buffalo 6-2. Alex Newhook had two goals to lead the Canadiens and take a 2-1 lead in the series. Anaheim knotted things up with Vegas with a 4-3 win on home ice. Tonight in the NHL, Avalanche in the Wild Game 4 from St. Paul. 7 o'clock on ESPN. Colorado a -140 puck line favorite. Major League Baseball, how about those Minnesota Twins? They find a way. Cody Clemens, big reason why your team won again yesterday.
As Clemens unloads right center field, that's a base hit. Should be extras, bounces off the wall. This could be three, but he'll settle for two as DeLauder picked it up at the base of the fence. It's the second double of the game for Cody Clemens. He ripped that ball.
He wasn't done then. Cody Clemens, three hits yesterday. Here's the final call.
Zana trying to pass the baton. The pitch swung on, bouncing ball. Brooksley waits on the big hop, has to hurry to first base, does so in time, and the Twins win in Cleveland. 6-3 the put out for the second straight night. It's a 6-3 put out to put a bow around a one-run win for the Minnesota Twins.
So Minnesota wins at 5-4. That's Chris Ativeri on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. New record for Minnesota is 18-23. The Guardians fall to 21-21. Other notable finals in the American League Central. White Sox beat Seattle 2-1. And Detroit over Kansas City 6-3 the final. Both of those teams are 19-22. If you think the American League stinks or is down this year, you're not wrong. And it gives everybody just a little bit more hope at this stage. Here's ESPN's Buster Olney.
You've got the Yankees and you've got the Rays. The Rays are at the top of the American League East now. The Yankees are a game behind them. And then you have the A's, one game or two games over 500. And then all other teams are under 500, which means that if you are the Red Sox, you are Detroit, you are Toronto, you're Seattle, and you've either underperformed, you've been hit by a wave of injuries, there is a lot of time to try to figure things out.
And again, from top to bottom, the American League Central separated by just 2.5 games. That is a tremendously small margin. In the West, it's 5.5, which is already small. A little bit bigger out there from Tampa to Boston in the American League East. But yes, wide open there. That was ESPN's Buster Olney. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Twins are off. They return to open a series at home against Miami tomorrow. Angels and Guardians tussle this afternoon. Evening, 5:10 the start time. Mariners and the Astros from Houston, 7:10 on Fox Sports 1. Predictably, in the NASCAR world over the weekend, the road course specialist won at the road course. Watkins Glen was won by New Zealand native Shane Van Gisbergen. And next up, the All-Star Race, Sunday at noon at Dover Motor Speedway on Fox Sports 1. And out of the National Football League, some news. We got a schedule nugget so far. We'll see about all the other breadcrumbs in the lead-up to the official schedule release, but it'll be the Giants against the Cowboys, Week 1, Sunday Night Football. Dan Graziano on the matchup.
NBC loves that game, historically, and for good reason. I think it's exciting. I think the Cowboys are probably in better position to make a statement Week 1, because I just don't know at this point, and I don't think the Giants do either, whether, Malik Nabers will be back and at full strength for that game. Cam Scadaboo, to D-Wood's point about running the ball, he's coming off of a major injury. And of course, you have the new coach there. and a program that I think we all have high hopes for, but may need some time to get up to speed. So again, no way to know between now and then, like who else gets hurt. But right now, the way it looks, the Cowboys, I think, would be set up to be the team that we'd be sitting there on Monday morning going, ooh, might they have something here.
More on that initial matchup release here later on in the show. Other news out of the NFL, Damian Woody is ticking me off and riling me up on a Monday with this one.
I'll go with Caleb.
Damian.
I'll go with Caleb. And the reason I say that, I'm a big believer in Ben Johnson. We saw the flair for the fantastic with Caleb. A lot of splash plays. But I did say last postmortem from, last season, is that he needed to learn how to bat singles. We know he can smash the home runs. But if he wants to be one of the elite quarterbacks, you got to do the mundane stuff. You got to bat the singles. Too many times last year, the ordinary plays, he was missing. The layup plays, he was missing. And I think that's going to come because of the coaching. He's going to fine-tune the small things, and his completion percentage is going to go up. And if you combine that with what the God-given ability that Caleb Williams have, I mean, that would be a scary, scary sight.
It's a really great debate. The question asked there to Damian Woody is, are you going to take Jordan Love or Caleb Williams for the next 5 years? Some people out there are like, Caleb Williams, duh. For me, it's a really great debate. Honestly, Jordan Love is still an ascending player, still getting into his rhythm. He's battled a lot of injuries over the last couple of seasons. Caleb Williams, like we talk about, the mundane has eluded him. But the fantastic is right there. Every single week, it seems, for Caleb Williams. Got pretty darn good down the stretch of last season. Last four regular season games, 8 touchdown passes against just 1 interception. But the big bugaboo, statistically there, that kind of falls right into line with the mundane, is he's got a completion percentage right around bad to mediocre rookie quarterback, 58% completion. That's not great. You want that 62, 65. If you're Drew Brees, 70, 71, 72%. A little bit below the Mendoza line if it's ideal, but again, it's hard to argue with what we saw last year, particularly at the behest of or at the detriment to my Green Bay Packers. Caleb Williams, very much worthy of the debate. Is do you taking him or Jordan Love for the next 5 years? In the tennis world on the scorecard, French Open around the corner. Action will begin on May the 23rd, run through June 7th. Golf coming up this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, PGA Championship. And then let's talk softball and baseball. NSIC softball over the weekend. 5th-seeded Augustana, 3-seed upsets in a row, including surviving a 15-14 first game. Home run fiesta against Mankato, found their way to the title game and took care of St. Cloud, the 2-seed, 6-1, the final. That is the 3rd straight tourney title for Augustana, and Augie softball advances to the NCAA tournament in the regional round. They will face top-seeded Missouri Southern State in their specific region. More on that in a moment. Summit League softball, USD, go Yotes. My goodness, what a run for them. On Saturday, they ended up playing 2, had an opportunity to close out Omaha in game 1. Mavericks poured on to a 10-1 win. But then in game 2, USD comes back and absolutely capitalizes. Finds a way, 2-1 the final, win their first Summit League title in program history. And USD has earned a bid to the Lincoln Regional, and they will match up with the team from Lincoln. That's the University of Nebraska, Friday, 5:30 on ESPN+. And don't forget about the Augustana Viking baseball team. Augustana, out of the NSIC tournament, picked up a 6-4 win over Mankato. Both of the teams who advanced to the same region, Augie's the 5-seed, and they'll see a matchup with 4-seeded Northwest Missouri State Thursday, 6:00. In the evening. For the latest there, go Augie.com, go Yotes.com. Let's talk Yotes. History made at James Sage Cowell Stadium on the campus of Minnesota Saturday afternoon. USD softball team overcame all odds this season and won 4 out of 5 games at the Summit League tournament to win the program's first ever conference title and clinched a berth to the NCAA softball tournament with a 2-1 winner-take-all victory over top-seeded Omaha. There are a lot of stars and studs on the team, but the one you need to know about was sophomore Madison Evans and what she was able to do all week and weekend long. Tremendous, gutsy performance in the winner-take-all game after Omaha got to Evans in game 1. She did not bat an eye and threw a stellar one-hit game against the Mavericks in game 2 to lead the Yotes to their first ever conference tournament title. On the weekend, Evans compiled a 4-1 record with a 1.69 ERA, struck out 32 batters over 29 innings of work, also allowed just 14 hits and 10 runs, 7 earned in the tournament, while holding the top-seeded Mavericks to just 3 hits and 1 hit in the 2 victories she had against that program. South Dakota again awaits their regional location that was announced last night. It'll be the Lincoln Regional, and we'll share more details as they become available. For the 7th time in the last 8 years, the Augustana baseball team is headed to the NCAA tournament. The NSIC champion Vikings, with a record of 41-13, have earned the 5 seed in the Central Region, and we'll head down to Pittsburgh, Kansas to face fourth-seeded Northwest Missouri State. Pittsburgh State will serve as the host of the NCAA Central Region pod number 1, and as the number 1 seed, they will play 7-seeded Arkansas Tech to round out the pod. In the region's first pod, the number 2 seed Roger State will play 3-seed Central Missouri. 6-seed Minnesota Mankato will take on 7-seed Missouri Southern. Full details, goaugie.com. It's also where you can find the news about the Augustana softball team. They are NCAA tournament bound for the 3rd consecutive season, as the Vikings have earned the 8th seed in the NCAA Central Region tournament, announced this morning by the selection committee. Fresh off of claiming the NSIC tourney championship, Augie will travel down to Joplin, Missouri for Central Region pod number 1, hosted by Missouri Southern. Vikings will be joined in the 14 pod by 4th seed Southern Arkansas, 5 seed St. Cloud State. Other teams down there: Pittsburgh State, Rogers State, Winona in Central Oklahoma. Full details, goaugie.com. And lastly, we cannot not mention what went down last night in game number 4 between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the San Antonio Spurs. Anthony Edwards scored a game-high 36 points to temporarily rescue a Timberwolves season that was teetering, and afterward gave a nod to his late mother for the performance. "Today's Mother's Day," Edwards said, redirecting the first news conference question. "I just wanted to win for my mom. It was that simple." Edwards' mother, Yvette Edwards, passed away from cancer back in 2015. Edwards certainly leading the show. T-Wolves beat the Spurs 114-109, taking advantage of a Victor Wembanyama ejection to tie the Western Conference semifinal series at 2-2 early in the second quarter. While securing a physical rebound in traffic, Wemby nailed Timberwolves center Naz Reid with a swinging elbow right to the chin, sending Reid to the floor and officials to the monitor. And kudos to Naz Reid, A, for the lack of response, but B, the response that he had playing the rest of the way and the big plays that he made. It's hard to find 6 men or players in a role like Naz Reid in the NBA. Dude is a difference maker and has been for a very long time for Minnesota Timberwolf basketball. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number 1. When we come back, it's your weekly history lesson on a Monday. We like to call it On This Day in Sports History, including a record that was set in 1893. I can't promise how long it was set for. I don't think it lasted very long, but that's where we start on this day in sports history. Wolves win game 4. NBA NHL chatter coming up next on this Monday, May 11th edition of Overtime.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, May 11th edition of Overtime. A reminder, Lewis Drug, Lewis Lawn and Garden is your one-stop shop to make your home, lawn, and garden shine. It's the title sponsor to the Good, the Bad, the Ugly. Coming up later, I just wanted to let you know that we made a trip to Lewis Drug over the weekend, got all the fruits and veggies for the garden, got the flowers for Mother's Day. One-stop shop, Lewis Lawn and Garden and Lewis Drug here in the 605. Let's blast away into the past with our On This Day in Sports History on a Monday.
History repeats itself.
Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner.
Well, sometimes.
You believe it? Yes!
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
And Barnes, that play high, pitch it deep, it is
and some that live forever.
In the end zone, it is caught for the win!
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
All right, down the rabbit hole we go. I apologize in advance, but my ears are perked up with this one. 1893 is where we start on this day in sports history. Some dude who I did look up, he's French, so I'm going to do my best here. His name is not Henri Desgrange. It would be Henri Desgrange. Established world's first bicycle world record, traveling 21.95 miles an hour. 21.95. In 1893. I don't think that lasted too long, so I put it in the old Google machine. What is the fastest time ever recorded on a bike? And then we got down a really deep rabbit hole. I'll keep it brief here, but away we go. The fastest human-powered bicycle speed ever recorded is 183.931 miles per hour, set by Denise Mueller-Kornenek on the Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah in 2018. Now, to be clear, this gets really wacky, so keep up, please. Mueller-Kornenek achieved this record on a motor-paced ride, meaning that she was initially towed, cheater, to a high speed by a dragster before cutting the tow line and riding the final mile under her own power, aided by a windshield to reduce aerodynamic drag. Now, is there an actual answer out there for the fastest human-powered flat course record on a bike? No, I can't find one. List the cycling records on Wikipedia. That particular record is standing, 2018, for Denise Mueller-Kornenek, but also there's flat surface outdoor male records. There's a downhill on snow record. There's a downhill on snow unpaced on a serial production bicycle. Have at it. Wikipedia, a lot of fun, and that is a very deep dive and a tough rabbit hole to navigate. Henri Desgrange, thanks so much. 1893 on this day in sports history. A little bit more modern, 1897, Washington Senator catcher Charlie Farrell would not be stolen on that day. Threw out 8 attempted stealers on this day in 1897. In the year 1900, two Jameses went at it for a very long time. James J. Jeffries knocked out James J. Corbett in 23 rounds for the heavyweight boxing title in 1900. How about that? 1963, L.A. Dodgers pitcher Sandy Koufax threw his second career no-no, beating Juan Marichal and the Giants 8-0 on this day in 1963. 1972, San Francisco Giants traded Willie Mays to the Mets for pitcher Charlie Williams and cash. 1977, Major League Baseball team owner Ted Turner, rest in peace as of last week, managed an Atlanta Braves baseball game and a couple other events to get to. 1980, Phillies Pete Rose at age 39 stole second, third, and home base in the same inning. Also in 1997, this is kind of a famous event. I remember hearing about it. Chess playing computer Deep Blue, developed by International Business Machines, IBM, defeated Russian Grandmaster Garry Kasparov 3.5 to 2.5 in chess. 1997, and lastly, 2009, Patrick Kane scored his first career hat trick in the NHL playoffs against the Vancouver Canucks. Birthdays to get to as part of your broader history lesson on this day in sports history. Today's a birthday for 1952 birthday for Mike Lupica, American sports journalist with ESPN, newspaper columnist with New York Daily, and a novelist as well, born in Oneida, New York, on this day in 1952. 1983, birthday for Heisman winner Matt Leinart, won the Heisman in 2004, pushed into the end zone by Reggie Bush against the Fighting Irish in 2003. Born in Santa Ana, California in 1983, happy birthday to Matt Leinart. And then another Heisman winner celebrating a birthday, probably the best single season we've seen, debatable for college football in a long time, Cam Newton, celebrating a birthday 1989, Heisman Trophy winner in 2010 at Auburn, NFL MVP in 2015, 3-time Pro Bowler, all with the Panthers, and then, of course, swan song career with the Patriots, couple other stops along the way, and back with Carolina in the end, born in Atlanta, Georgia, on this day in 1989. Let's get into some basketball talk here and some odds in a moment. After exactly 3 weeks of deliberation, Steve Kerr agreed to a 2-year contract to return as the Golden State Warriors head coach, reaching terms to continue the partnership into what will be his 13th season and beyond in the position. Deal will keep Kerr as the highest paid coach in the NBA, has made $17.5 million last year at multiple meetings with controlling owner Joe Lacob and general manager Mike Dunleavy over the past 2 weeks, discussing everything from offensive philosophy to be the long-term outlook of the roster to the bigger picture direction of the franchise and so much more. Steve Kerr sticking around, and that is good news for the NBA and, of course, the Warriors. It is likely the final year of the current system of the NBA's draft lottery, and the Washington Wizards proved the 8th time is the charm. After the team with the worst record in the NBA in each of the previous 7 draft lotteries under the current format had failed to land the top overall selection, the Wizards, who went 17-65 this year, came out on top in the much-anticipated lottery Sunday in Chicago. Washington was followed by the Jazz, who were tied for the 4th best odds at number 2. The Grizzlies had the 6th best odds. They landed number 3. And the Bulls, with the 9th best odds, came on up to number 4. It's never been an exact science. Again, the odds are the odds, but it's always a little bit of a coin flip here or a lottery ball roll. But there's your top 4, Washington, Utah, Memphis, and Chicago at number 4. Now, after the exit from the postseason, Joel Embiid had an opportunity to talk about how he's feeling. And in the wake of another season ending in the 2nd round of the playoffs, Joel Embiid missing large chunks of the season while injured, the Sixers star center struck an optimistic tone about his health moving forward. "I'm as confident as I've ever been," Embiid said Sunday after Philly was routed by the Knicks in Game 4 and swept out of the postseason. "I think obviously my knee was the biggest concern, and I'm not thinking about it. As long as we can keep doing what we've been doing, I won't have to think about it too much anymore." That's good news for Philly. And if you think about long-term outlook, I'm talking 1 year, 2 year, 5 years down the road. I know Embiid does not have that much longer of a runway. You feel like he's got a good career ahead. How much longer is a top flight player? Is he still a top flight player? Probably not top flight, but still pretty darn capable. Is a star, absolutely. But you like where Philly is. Maybe don't love it, but you like where they are. With Edgecombe, ascending young talent. Maxey, a star in his own right. And Embiid, we'll see if they can keep that core together in Philadelphia this offseason. On the other side, there was exhausted jubilation at Xfinity Mobile Arena as the Knicks clinched their 2nd straight berth in the Eastern Conference Finals. But the noise didn't come from their bench. Instead, it came from the droves of fans who took over the road arena over the weekend, watched their team sweep their way into the NBA's Final Four with a resounding, record-setting 30-point win over the Sixers on Sunday. For the Knicks players, it wasn't like the unbridled emotion that filled MSG following their unexpected series win over then-champion Boston last year. Fans taking over Midtown Manhattan, light posts and all, this time around securing the victory, light work. And an optimistic Knicks team, and one that should not be doubted the rest of the way going on right now. Let's take a look quickly at those odds from the NBA. The Knicks have the 3rd best odds. OKC minus 175, still the front runner, as they should be. San Antonio plus 400. New York plus 600. Detroit plus 2,000. Cleveland, Minnesota, Lakers. Minnesota very much disrespected. That series, last time I checked, is tied. And the Spurs have plus 400 odds. Minnesota plus 6,500. Right now at DraftKings Sportsbook. Quick foray over to the NHL, where we can take a look at the latest odds there. Carolina, as they deserve, have not lost a postseason game yet. They're now your odds-on favorite. First time we could say that in a long time. It's been Colorado for months. Carolina out of Raleigh, plus 150, is your Stanley Cup favorite. Colorado still 2nd, plus 185, in control for now of the series against Minnesota, leading 2-1. Avalanche, plus 185. Vegas, plus 800. Montreal, plus 950, Minnesota, Buffalo, Anaheim. Rest of the way for your latest odds roundup. Somehow, some way, we got a lot of NFL news to get into this Monday edition of the show, including a notable contract extension for an Iowa State alum. No more tease. It's Breece Hall with the New York Jets. Got a big extension and a payday to stay with the New York Jets. 3-year deal on Friday after the show. We'll recap that, everything else you might have missed out of the National Football League, and more coming up as we continue to make our way through hour number 1 on a Monday edition of Overtime. Keep it locked and loaded. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000. KSOO.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome back to Overtime on a Monday. Minutes ago, delivered on this day in sports history. Update on the latest odds where the T-Wolves continue to be disrespected in the odds makers' eyes in Las Vegas. We'll also dive in hour number two. Sioux Falls Stampede head coach Ryan Crothers will join us talking about a winner-take-all game five in the Western Conference Finals coming up tomorrow at the Premier Center in town. Sioux Falls Stampede head coach joining us at 12:20. USF Cougar baseball season recap with head coach Grant Heeb coming up at the end of the show. We'll call that 12:40-ish today on the program. Let's talk some football. We're going to start with Ohio State and Northwestern, where the class of 2027 quarterback RJ Day, the son of Ohio State coach Ryan Day, has announced his commitment to not the Ohio State University, but he's going to commit to Northwestern. As of yesterday, the 6'1", 205-pound signal caller from Columbus is a three-year starter at Ohio's St. Francis DeSales High School, where he owns multiple school passing records, announced his pledge to the Wildcats on social media, over offers from Purdue, Cuse, Cincinnati, and South Florida, among others. Not ranked by ESPN, but RJ Day, we don't know if he got an offer from his dad, preferred walk-on, something of that nature, or a outright scholarship offer. But he's going to go to a different Big Ten school up in Evanston and play for the Northwestern Wildcats. Other news to get to, the big breaking news out of the Twin Cities and the Minnesota Vikings today is nothing to stress over, but something to celebrate. How about this? As of this morning, Kevin Seifert of ESPN.com reporting, retired running back Adrian Peterson will enter the Vikings Ring of Honor this fall. The team announced today the induction will come 1 year before Peterson is eligible for election to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So he'll be getting his purple jacket before a gold jacket. The Vikings hosted Peterson last week at their facility to speak with players who were assembled for rookie minicamp. During an interview with Vikings Entertainment Network, retired Vikings defensive lineman John Randall surprised Peterson with the news. It's a special moment and then something that I've dreamed about for a while, Peterson said after Randall's presentation. I feel blessed. My name goes up there with the greatest in this organization. It's a blessing. Lot of great players for the Minnesota Vikings in their history. Peterson's still just 41 years old. Played for Minnesota from 2007 to 2016. Holds the franchise record for most rushing yards with 11,747 and touchdowns with 97 while playing for the team. Went on to play for New Orleans, Arizona, Washington, Detroit, Tennessee, and Seattle. Finished just shy of 15,000. Rushing yards and 120 touchdowns. Those marks both rank fifth in NFL history. Congratulations, Adrian Peterson, a future Vikings Ring of Honor member. New York Jets running back Breece Hall, given the franchise tag on March the 3rd, did avoid the tag eventually, agreeing to a three-year, $43.5 million contract Friday that can be worth up to nearly $46 million, sources told ESPN. The contract includes $29 million in guarantees, according to agent Nicole Lynn of Clutch Sports. The average per year ranks fourth among running backs behind Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Derrick Henry. And Hall moved past Super Bowl MVP recent Chiefs signee Kenneth Walker III. Value of the franchise tag was $14.3 million. So that slides right in. Little bit shy of that, times three over 3 years, but Breece Hall getting that long-term security that is pretty rare for running backs these days. A big deal signed on Friday for the former Iowa State All-American. Well, the Chargers are in the news. They've agreed to terms with a new tight end, former Cleveland Browns tight end, veteran David Njoku, one of the biggest names remaining on the market, signing a one-year deal with Jim Harbaugh's team up to $8 million, according to the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Njoku's 29, became a free agent after his contract voided on February 10th, and over the entirety of his nine-year career, all with the Browns, Njoku ranks second in team history in touchdown catches and receptions for a tight end, trailing, of course, Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it, Ozzie Newsome. Njoku has missed 11 games due to injury over the last 2 years. His production also dipped this past season. Although he caught 4 touchdowns, he recorded just 33 catches for 293 yards. He will play second fiddle, likely, to a very inspiring young tight end of the Chargers, Aronde Gadsden, who had 49 catches for 664 yards and 3 scores as a rookie last year. LA also added blocking tight end Charlie Kohler on its roster. So you talk about the Harbaugh brothers, and you talk about the willingness and desire to muddy up the trenches, run the heck out of the football, big bodies in there, additional tackles in the contest. They got 3 really good tight ends for the LA Chargers right now. Njoku trending towards the end of his career, but it's a good signing. 1 year, $8 million, up to $8 million. Gadsden's an exciting, big, physical, great receiving young tight end. And Charlie Kohler, no slouch either, coming over from Baltimore. Chargers have a really nice tight end room as of this morning. Buffalo Bills are starting the week by adding a veteran defender by way of Kansas City. Pro Football Talk on the news that Buffalo has signed outside linebacker Mike Dana to a 1-year deal. The 28-year-old was released by the Chiefs in February after spending his first 6 seasons with the team. Just last year, appeared in 15 games, 25 total tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits, a sack, and an interception. 5th-round pick back in 2020, Dana has appeared in 87 games, 49 starts, and now is a member of the rival Buffalo Bills. Jacksonville has added a veteran running back, and the career of Ameer Abdullah continues in the National Football League. Also, courtesy of Pro Football Talk this morning, the Jags have announced that they've signed the former Husker running back. He turns 33 in June, spent last year with Indianapolis, mainly playing on special teams, and he did have 60 yards rushing and a touchdown, along with 16 receptions for 99 yards. Ameer Abdullah joins a Jaguar backfield that does not have a ton of big names. Bashal Scootin' Tootin' going to be in the backfield, the leading back there after the departure of Travis Achane out of the backfield. We'll see where Ameer Abdullah could slot in there for Jacksonville. Might just be special teams or a change of pace back, but that career inspiring one continuing at age 33 for the former Husker running back as of today. Well, the Denver Broncos have an update for us on quarterback Bo Nix. Head coach Sean Payton said on Saturday that the quarterback is on track to participate on a limited basis in the team's mini camp next month and will be, quote, full speed by the time the team's training camp begins this summer. Nix suffered a fractured right ankle tragically this past January in the Broncos' win over the Bills in the AFC Divisional, had a second follow-up surgery on the ankle days before the draft and during draft weekend. Payton termed Nix's follow-up visit with Dr. Norman Waldrop III, who performed Nix's initial surgery in January in Birmingham, a recheck, said there was, quote, nothing to report. News of Nix's second surgery surfaced days later. Payton saying he'll be well ahead of time for training camp. We're going to be the ones kind of holding him back, if you will. That's the update from Denver on quarterback Bo Nix. How about Odell Beckham Jr.? Is he going to get the career restarted with the New York Giants or otherwise? Giants said maybe, but not right now. 33-year-old, currently a free agent, worked out with the team last month and, quote, looked good. According to John Harbaugh, the Giants' first-round pick back in 2014, wants to return to the Big Apple, but Harbaugh has emphasized it's a move that has to make sense for both sides. Here's what he had to say. Talked to Odell a lot, probably 3 or 4 times in the last week. See where he's at, where we're at. Harbaugh said Saturday after a Giants rookie minicamp practice, he's in Arizona right now training, spending time with his son. The goal for right now is for him to train and get as ready as he can be. And then we'll see where we're at that time. No signing imminent. It feels like the flirtation is mutual between the Giants and Odell Beckham Jr. Who knows what he really has left in the tank? It's been a while. 4, 5, 6 years now where we've seen, maybe more like 4 years since we've seen Odell Beckham Jr. be on the football field, making a difference, making big plays. You got to think back to that Rams-Bengals Super Bowl. That's probably fairly the last time we saw him be a difference-maker kind of player. Been a while for Odell Beckham Jr. That career might continue in the Big Apple. And lastly here, a couple other New York-based storylines. His sprained right ankle barking. His play was suffering. The fan base was groaning. But Jets rookie quarterback Cade Klubnik persevered through a difficult final season at Clemson, damaged his draft stock, but not his confidence. Here's what he had to say over the weekend at Jets rookie minicamp. In my mind, I'm a winner. I don't mean that in a boastful way. I think that's the mentality you have to have as a quarterback, and I think that my resume has kind of showed that as well. Klubnik won 2 ACC titles at Clemson, not to mention 3 high school state titles in Texas, which, of course, we know the caliber of Texas high school football and the quarterbacks that play there. That's pretty darn impressive. Cade Klubnik, I'm not going to say this too much under the radar. That's a really pretty solid landing spot. It is the Jets. That's the worst nasty situation there about it, but you don't have to play right away. You got a veteran there in Geno Smith to take it up and run with it this year. You might not even play at all, even if Geno Smith stinks with the New York Jets this year. But you got a decent offensive line, decent weapons forming around you, and they added a ton of other weapons up front, tight end, receiver in the draft. You kind of like where you're at as a quarterback, Cade Klubnik. You're not thrust into action right away. Probably shouldn't do that if you were the Jets. We'll see. That's not a bad landing spot, and you got to root for Cade Klubnik heading into the NFL. Lastly, more New York football team news. The New York Giants and John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh will make his debut for the team in primetime against one of the biggest rivals. The NFL announced today that the Giants will host the Dallas Cowboys on September 13th in the first Sunday night football game of the season. It'll mark the 8th time since 2012 that the NFC East rivals will square off in their season opener. Cowboys won 6 of their past 7 week 1 games against the Giants, and the Giants hope to reverse that trend under Harbaugh, who was hired by New York in January after spending 18 years as the head coach of the Ravens. I was thinking about this in the lead up to the segment and also earlier on this morning about that division. And, you know, the NFC North, the division that we cover mostly here in Sioux Falls and talk about and root for, root against mostly here in Sioux Falls, is absurdly competitive. You got the Bears on the up, Packers, pretty darn talented, we'll see. Lions, tried and true, they should be pretty darn good. The Minnesota Vikings, don't sleep on them either. I wish I could, I'm not going to, because they've got a good team. But in the NFC East right now, that is also a division that's pretty darn hard to predict top to bottom. Who's going to win it? Philly feels like the safe bet, but with the dysfunction and the up and down nature of the tenure of Nick Sirianni, we're going to have to wait and see. What is this team without A.J. Brown, the physical freak? Because there is a massive, massive gap, in my opinion, from the talent level of A.J. Brown at his best to the talent level of Devontae Smith at his best. I feel like the Slim Reaper is a really solid, kind of like a Jordan Addison type, really solid wide receiver too. Is he an alpha? I don't think so. So the potential trade away for A.J. Brown and how they recalibrate things following the losses of N'Kobe Dean and Reed Blankenship on defense and more is going to be interesting in Philadelphia. Then you got Dallas, who has all sorts of talent. They've drafted well. They've made some big trades, brought in Rashawn Gary, Quinnen Williams, other guys recently. You feel like Dallas has got the wheels turning. They're the Cowboys, so they'll get to the postseason and not win. But then you get to D.C., where just this time last year, we were saying, oh my gosh, look out for the Commanders. They're amazing. They got this quarterback. They're going to figure it out. They got the defense. Oh my goodness. And then everything came unglued last year, injuries and otherwise. Big regression defensively. That's an interesting team. And then I got to tell you too, I'm not the world's biggest fan of the prospects of the Giants offense until the John Harbaugh hire. Jackson Dart, Cam Scataboo, like those guys. Don't love them just yet in their careers. But that is a very tough division to predict, because I think, and I might be absolutely nuts, but I think the New York Giants could come in second in that division. I don't think they could win it, but I think they could come in second. I think the Commanders' ceiling is probably second as well. But then Dallas and Philly are interchangeable. They both could win it. They both could come in second or third. It's going to be a very tough division to predict, and it'll be on center stage early this year. Giants-Cowboys, the first breadcrumb of the NFL schedule release, which is rumored to be this week. A lot to break down, a lot to love moving forward out of the National Football League. That is hour number one on a Monday edition of Overtime. When we come back into your headlines and highlights, and before long, we're talking about a winner-take-all Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals in the USHL. Sioux Falls Stampede and the Fargo Force here in Sioux Falls Premier Center. Tickets are available. Ready for your purchase right now, ESPNSiouxFalls.com, the place to go to find that ticketing link, or swing by the Premier Center box office over your lunch break today. We'll be talking with Stampede head coach Ryan Crothers at 12:20. USF baseball season recap with head coach Grant Heave around 12:40. Keep it locked and loaded. It's overtime, and it continues after this on ESPN Sioux Falls.